Let's go there. This is a sound that happened in Venice a few centuries ago. Music created in St. Mark's Cathedral in Venice, originally the opening of the Monteverdi Vespers, and there's let's jump right into it and let everybody hear this lovely story. Eckhart Proy, good morning.
Good morning.
And Christina Ploeger, good morning.
Good morning.
And Eckhart Proy, I put that on, and you had a childhood flashback. Tell us all about that.
A big flashback. Yeah. Well, I was member of the Dresden Boys Choir between the ages 10 and 18, and we actually recorded the Vespers by Monteverdi when I was 11 years old. And there's a recording out there, and I'm a soloist on it too. And when you're 11 and you're confronted with such a monumental work, and it's just phenomenal. I mean, I will never forget that. Mm-hmm. And it also made kind of Baroque music, or actually pre-Baroque. It's pre-Baroque, you know, mm-hmm. it's Renaissance music. It brought it very near to me, and to understand that everything that we hear now, the operas now are based on Monteverdi, and all the and Monteverdi was already dancing and had the beat and had the monumentally like Handel just is totally based on Monteverdi, and so Monteverdi was really a revolutionary, not only for his time, but I think really paved the way for pretty much everything that came afterwards. And that's 400 years ago.
And so that suddenly explains a whole lot of things about the fact that what we're here to talk about is the second of a two-part series this year of Baroque concerts in area churches. You did one in December, and then there's this pair of them on this weekend at Saturday evening at 7 o'clock at Westminster Congregational, UCC, which is at 4th and Washington, and then it's Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at Nazarene Church on Sullivan Road, I think 16th and Sullivan or 8th and Sullivan, somewhere around there, very close to Central Valley High School is that one. And Eckhart, you originated this. This was something that, as you talked in December, was dear to your heart, but now this even explains a little more to the dear to your heart of this era of music.
Yeah, and I think it's really good for us as musicians, for us as listeners, because it is really, there's so much Baroque music out there, and it's very rarely played. I think it's definitely mm-hmm. underperformed, and so one of the responsibilities that we have as the biggest arts organization in town is to kind of make sure that we not only play the blockbusters that we need to play, But then we also do all the other stuff that we kind of need to do. And Baroque music is such an integral part of what we need to do. And it's a lot of fun to do it as well.
The December concert certainly showed that. And specifically, you're doing a little bit of Monteverdi. Is some Monteverdi instrumental music on this concert?
Yeah. So these are the dances, basically ritornellos and dances from his opera Orfeo. Which is, again, it was groundbreaking. I mean, opera was just starting up then, and nobody really knew what to expect. You know, it's like, oh, these actors are going to sing. And that was like the biggest event in town. And that was 410 years ago, you know, Orfeo, and it was super successful. And what is interesting about that is that he really just wrote down two lines. He wrote down the soprano line and the bass line. Everything was filled in, and he never really specified exactly what needed to be played. He said, well, I need maybe five trombones there and maybe a harp. Mm-hmm. And then for this one, I want to hear, you know, a voice and a couple of violins and a cello or something. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of flexibility what you can do. And so the arrangement that we are going to play it was made by Malipiero, Italian composer, and as arrangement for strings only, and kind of is kind of a mix of five dances from that opera.
Nice. And so that's Monteverdi on this concert, and it is there. We'll cycle back around to the instrumental discussion, but then also choral.
Yeah, I think that the singing voice, the human voice, was so important. Even more so than nowadays, I think, for how you produce sound and how you write for instruments. And I think there was this very close relationship between instrumental writing and choral writing. And so I wanted to really include some choral piece in this Baroque program. And since we have the symphony chorale, who they usually, you know, sing all the big stuff. You know, they sing our Carmina Burana and Verdi Requiem and Beethoven 9 every year. And I think that when you sing Baroque music, your mind needs to change and your voice needs to change. And I think you need to be so disciplined. And I told the chorus, anybody can sing a Verdi Requiem, but not everybody can sing Vivaldi. And I think it's really good for the chorus. And I did a really great job, thanks to Christina Ploger, our choral director, to kind of really focus the energy on all these little details and vocal production, which is very different than when you sing Carmina.
Yeah, so come in and prove that factor. Good morning, Christina.
Oh, you want me to sing? Okay.
Because certainly you're no stranger to the Vivaldi Gloria, but talk about, you know, about some of the things Eckhart was just mentioning about how you train them, what you do, what you accomplish with them.
Well, it's been a fairly normal rehearsal process in terms of, in terms of trying to get everyone on the same page. Mm. But what's been really fun is that Eckhart sent us some great markings before we started, and they're exciting. You know, it gives those people, especially those people that say, this is my 12th Vivaldi Gloria, you know, it gives them something to focus on in getting exactly the goal that he needs from them to produce something exciting and new out of this literature that really does need to be performed.
Yeah, got a for instance?
A for instance.
An example.
Yeah, there's some accents and that are in places they're not used to putting them. There are just dealing with the length of note in terms of something that someone in the Baroque would have known how to phrase that doesn't necessarily translate because of the notation. Yeah. So being really specific with them so that they can get both a more authentic performance, but a more fresh performance of this, because as it's been cycling around since it got found in 1939 and everybody's been singing it, it's affected by how people think about singing at that time. So if maybe a thicker and heavier vibrato is more in vogue at that point in time, people may be addressing it in that way. And so you can find recordings of this done so many different ways. And so I guess what we've appreciated in the rehearsal process is trying to achieve something lighter, something more shapely, something that isn't just going to roll along like a 1950s tank.
Yeah, and did you, in the Dresden Boys Choir, did you encounter this piece at all when you were a kid?
I have no memory of doing it. Yeah. So I don't think we did, but what I've noticed as I grow older is that, in particular with Baroque and early classical music, the ambiguity of notation is so blatant. You know, they basically put nothing in there. I mean, barely dynamics, no markings, and so I think you need to facilitate the performers. You need to arrange it basically to your understanding.
Sometimes
what it
just
sounds
like. Length of note.
Yeah, yeah, and phrases,
specific.
and in Monteverdi even more so, but in Vivaldi too, the bar line is very often in the way. You know, where the phrases ignore the bar lines, and we are so trained to observe the bar lines because that's how we function now. But back then, I think it was much freer, and so there's like 7-measure phrases and 2.5-measure phrases, which it makes it very unnatural for us because we are trained differently. Mm-hmm. And so you need to actually really point out to just ignore the bar line and just go with the flow of the music, mm-hmm. and forget the visual. You know, because we are very visual when we are professionals, because we read so much music, and so if you forget the visual and just go with the oral, and then all of a sudden you have different phrases, and that kind of makes it fresh.
Let's do this. Let's hear the first movement of the first opening chorus of the Vivaldi Gloria, just to get a feeling for what is being discussed here with Eckhart Proye and Christina Ploeger. So that's the opening of the Vivaldi Gloria, just to kind of orient us to what tune we're talking about. Christina Ploeger, the conductor of the Symphony Chorale, Eckhart Proye, the conductor of the symphony, and this pair of concerts Saturday evening at Westminster Church in Spokane, at 4th and Washington, and then Sunday afternoon at the Nazarene Church in Spokane Valley, just off Sullivan Road, off South Sullivan Road. So back kind of to the whole thing of the Vivaldi Gloria, there are soloists involved.
And it's like this very typical setup where you have the chorus kind of providing the pillars, mm-hmm. And the solo is kind of providing the bridge a bit in between, and also it they sing together, they sing solo, and it kind of makes for very colorful. And I think Vivaldi is all about color, and it's about quick, short movements. I mean, he was ADD. I don't know, but it's perfect for Generation X, where you have none of the movements is longer than five. I mean, 5 minutes is a long movement.
Yeah.
And so usually they're like three, four minutes. And so he's fast paced and he moves on. He never really dwells. And maybe also because he composed fast, maybe it was because it was written for young people back then. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was written for the chorus of his orphanage, where he was the music director, and these were all young girls, and like high school, early college age girls, and apparently they were phenomenal, and there were four of those in Venice, and they were all competing with each other, and so, I mean, they were apparently really high quality, and there was apparently this real draw from abroad of people just flocking to Venice to hear these high quality, child laborers, if you want, and so maybe that's why they're so short. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it's all about color and it's about quick and then moving on.
Yeah. And the soloists, I know from the two soloists, Christina.
Yeah, this is exciting. Dr. Abigail Cote, who's new to our city, and she has, like, her master's degree is in opera production and doctorate in vocal performance and just a wonderful singer and great person. So she's the new soprano, and I'm excited for her to work with Eckhart and for everybody to get to know each other. And then the favorite here, Anne Benson. So just been spending a lot of time creating a career in singing for herself. And, we know and love Anne. So the two of them together will be a really wonderful combination.
Mm. And how many members of the chorale are doing this? All of them?
80,
and so you have to fit the, you get to fit them into the to those two spaces.
There's a plan.
Yeah, there would have to be. Yeah,
there's a good plan. Chuck was very helpful. We had a good walk around for that.
Yeah. Nice, but that'll be really be nice full Vivaldi in those two
it's
spaces.
It's definitely not the way it was first performed, but I think it'll be beautiful.
I think it will having all these people on stage at the end will provide for a very nice powerful finish of a program, because usually the orchestra that we work with for the other pieces, for the Albinoni, for the Tartini, for the Monteverdi, it's basically just strings. I mean, it's like you're talking about 25-30 people, so in having then kind of a chorale and soloists at the end will kind of round this program out.
And so let's talk about the other pieces, because it seems that it's all with the, other than the Monteverdi, it's all within that golden age of Italian violin playing.
Right. So Monteverdi is the old guy, and then 100 years later, so there we have Albinoni, Vivaldi, and Tartini, and Albinoni we know basically only because of the Adagio, the Albinoni Adagio that he didn't write, really. But he was a very prolific composer, actually. A lot of his music got lost during the bombing of World War II of the Dresden State Library, and was lost for the longest time and has been kind of rediscovered. And so we're going to play an Albinoni Sinfonia, which is you can hear Vivaldi in there. So there's a lot of recognizable traits and sequences, and it's the same fast-paced music. It's also fairly short. Actually, all the concertos and sinfonias of that time are no longer than 10 minutes, and it's like between 8 and 10 minutes. And then we have that was kind of a discovery for me in many ways, was a piece by one of the great violin virtuosos and fathers of the modern violin playing, Tartini, at the time, and it's called the Devil's Trill Sonata. And the story goes that Tartini, during his sleep, the devil came and played for him, and it was so difficult and so great with double stops and trills. And when he woke up, he tried to reproduce what he had just heard and said, it's not even close to as beautiful and as difficult as I heard it in my dream, but as every single violinist can attest, it is still one of the most difficult things you can do. And so, but it's so hauntingly beautiful and difficult, of course. And our concertmaster, Mateusz Walski, when I asked him, he's like, do you want to take this on? He said, sure. He's always up for it.
He always says that.
Yeah, and it's a phenomenal piece, you know. But you know, I talked to him about, like, what makes it so difficult? And it's because you have double stops. You stretch your left hand to an enormous degree, and then you have to trill. Mm-hmm. And so it's really any violinist has trouble with that. Mm-hmm. But when you have trouble with something, when it doesn't fall naturally, then you get this particular artistic kind of tension and energy to it. And I think that's what makes, you know, these virtuoso pieces so thrilling, is if they come too easily, and there are certain soloists who play too easy, then there's no thrill to it. Mm-hmm. But when you hear the struggle, and when you hear the risk also that is in there, then I think it becomes a really thrilling experience. But this is just anywhere between hauntingly beautiful and devilishly difficult. Everything is in there.
There we go. So that's the concert on Saturday night at 7 o'clock and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. This effort by the Spokane Symphony to do Baroque music. And is there some hope that that will continue as the kind of thing that
we are planning on doing another two concert series next year for sure.
Yeah. And so in two area churches, Westminster Congregational UCC, which is at 4th and Washington on the Saturday night one, and then the Nazarene Church, which is on Sullivan, and I can't remember, is it 8th or 16th? I know the high school is at one of the places in the Central Valley High School, and I think it's at 16th,
it's further
south. You'll find it off of South Sullivan Road. Is there. So those two concerts. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks.